Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us for MIT's second quarter financial results for financial year 2023-24. My name is Melissa from Investor Relations. We have the management team of MIT with us this morning. Wei, our CEO, Lily, our CFO, Peter, our Head of Investments, Serene, the Head of Asset Management, and Kim, the Head of Marketing. We have uploaded results presentation last evening, which we'll be using for this discussion. Without further ado, I'll pass it on to Kuo. We'll just go through the key highlights and we'll proceed on to Q&A. Kuo, please.
Okay, good morning. I hope you can hear me because we don't get any feedback. Hopefully, this is not a solid key. Okay, I got the thumbs up. We'll run through the key highlights. It's actually a fairly straightforward quarter for us. And questions after that. If you look at the first bullet point, essentially from the distribution point of view, able to deliver more, 3.5% more year-on-year basis for the quarter to $94 million. DPU perspective, see a 1.2% decrease, 3.32 cents. The key reason is because of the enlarged unit holder base. We did previous year the third series of our equity, the distribution reinvestment plan. We had one equity fundraise exercise that we did June this year for our Japanese asset acquisition. So that increased our unit base 2.7 to 2.8 billion units, 4.8% increase. So we essentially have more unit holders share slightly larger distribution. So that resulted in the near-term shift in DPU. But on the operating front, if you look at our second set of bullet points, we have registered very, I would say, robust kind of results. Rent revisions, we're happy to say, positive across all the property segments. In fact, if we aggregate property, rather the rental revisions, we're looking at 2.8%. So that's very encouraging from the revenue side. Of course, that is reflected in the higher rental rates as well. If you look at the Singapore portfolio and the US portfolio, both are getting higher rates, 19 for Singapore and 242 managing the portfolio. The portfolio average lease to expiration has also increased from 3.9 years to 4.2 years because of our recently completed transaction. As you can see in the third bullet point, finally completed just before the end of the quarter, 28th of September. So we would expect contributions to be meaningful from the quarter onwards. And on the capital management front, I think it's relatively stable. 80% of our borrowings are still hedged. Annual 3.7 years. Our leverage ratio see as a fairly healthy 7.9% level. So I think that sums up what we have for the quarter. Maybe I can take questions.
Thank you, Kuo Wei. May I request for analysts to click the raise hand icon on WebEx? In the interest of time, we will limit to two questions first, and then we'll come back if there's more time. Yes, great. Okay, sorry. The first question would be Derek. Derek from DBS.
Hi, good morning, Melissa. Can you hear me?
Yes, it's all good.
Hi, morning, Kuo Wei. Just two quick questions. First one is, could you give us an update on the AT&T leases that is expiring this year? Then my second question would be on the interest rates, right? Maybe could Lily give us a sense of where will you expect interest rates to land by the end of this financial year? Yeah, just two quick questions. Thanks.
Okay,
our ability to attempt to answer the very difficult question because it's crystal ball gazing. All is a bit hazy and cloudy. So now on the leasing of the AT&T facilities, we are still engaging the market. So as you would have seen in our highlights and report, we don't have any leases crystallized yet. So for the Tennessee asset, which is the second largest of our book, one I think they closer to us reaching some form of agreement. Working very hard on that, and hopefully by fourth quarter, this financial year, we'll be able to share whatever we are able to.
Sorry, I think you're a bit muffled. You say you're floating in and out.
Yeah, the reason why I'm floating in and out is floating butterfly. You know, you remember our friend Muhammad Ali. But I won't sting you, don't worry. Yeah, I'm walking back, pacing back off. Anyway, so I'll stay put at the IM. So essentially for that, the particular asset is, Tennessee asset is closer to us reaching some form of agreement. And it is a long process, but we are about to help. That's why I'm saying hopefully by fourth quarter, we'll be able to share of the specifics. The other and the lease for the tenancy asset will be expiring, but so we still have a bit of rent income in time. The one thing to note that even if we are able to secure a lease, generally with or for leases with fairly long to allocate rent-free or tenant incentives. So we anticipate thereabouts without rent contribution.
Okay. Thank you. How about the interest rates? Hello?
Sorry. Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, can you again?
The system doesn't want me to speak. Okay. So, okay, as I was saying, the interest cost for this quarter is reported at 3.2%. It is definitely lower than last quarter simply because of the addition of the JPY borrowings. So that mathematically kind of bring it down. So if you look at the rest of the year, we don't think that the interest cost will change very significantly. So we probably can look at it to be around the three between the 3.2 to the 3.5 range. But of course, that depends on where the interest rate goes and what the Fed decides to do. I guess to hike or not to hike, that is the question, right? So I think for next, but I would say for this financial year, we don't have a lot of hedges that will be expiring. So they are actually quite small percentage, and the effect of which is not expected to be that significant. So I think that's not so much an issue. For the next financial year, we do have some close to about 200 million of debt of hedges that will be falling off. So those, I think, if we were to do a replacement again, the impact shouldn't be too significant. But I think the bigger risk that we have here is really the replacement of the hedges that is reported at the joint venture level. Okay. So at the joint venture level, for this financial year, we have $120 million US of hedges that will be up for renewal. So we have actually done some hedges ahead of time on forward start basis. So I think all in the impact is will be quite muted. So I think for this financial year, the impact may not be that significant. Come next financial year, we would expect to see the full effect of such replacement. So we should be expecting the interest cost to go up. And I was, if you can recall, the joint venture was actually acquired back in, I think, 2020. So the interest rate, general interest rate level at that point of time is relatively low. We are looking at, around the 1% level. Today, if we were to go out and hedge, I think the 2-3 years rate would be hovering around a 4.5%. So we can expect quite a bit of the impact arising from this replacement. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, give me good color on that. All right. Hey, thank you very much. That's all for me.
I think we have just a request to repeat the last part of the AT&T explanation, because I think I was muted accidentally.
Muted accidentally. Turn off my
last part, maybe last two.
Okay, anyway.
The last two.
Two of the three assets, the second largest, which I mentioned earlier, Tennessee, about 1.8%. Gauging the aspect very closely. Hopefully, by fourth quarter, we'll be able to share specifics on whatever we are able to close up. That lease, existing lease of AT&T expiring end of November. So we would have still a little bit of rental income in the meantime. But the effect, rent-free for any new tenant would be taken in. So from the cash flow perspective, even if we are able to get lease in place, that we have a year or so of zero cash flow. So that is a practical consideration from your perspective.
Okay, can we have the next question from Mervin?
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Congrats on the strong rental reversions. But maybe you can touch on divestment gains. How much do you have left in the kitty? Because of it, some of the surprise that you have divestment gains from 2017. And in terms of managing DPU, would you also increase the proportion of management fees paid in units going forward to temper any impact from higher borrowing costs? And my second question is related to slide 13. For FY25, about $544 million, how much of that is US dollar versus Sing dollar? And do you have a borrowing cost guidance for FY25? Thanks.
Yeah, okay. Now, first, let me share with you, we have no kitty, not find it. So the reason why we have done this distribution this way was essentially a sequencing consideration, and essentially whatever we have available, we would certainly try to distribute. Now, you look at the capital distribution this quarter that we also apply to next quarter, coming from areas, the first $4.2 million from the 65 Tech Park Crescent investment. At that time, we were still waiting for clarity on the tax treatment. Only recently did we get clarity, and with us having that certainty, we proceeded with the divestment, or rather distribution of the divestment gains. Of course, one consideration a couple of years back was we have done the bit of distribution while setting aside a bit of the tax treatment, but the amount becomes very small. It may not be as meaningful. And as you have seen, Soon after that, we have the 26A Ayer Rajah Crescent investment done for data center that we built for Equinix. So that is relatively material. We proceeded with 8 quarters, the distribution of close to $16 million. So decided not to co-mingle these various ops. This was put aside till we have that clarity. Same consideration for the Ouyang compensation as what we have written down there. It was from the compensation from the government for taking a small sliver of land for the MRT works. So not a lot of money, 2.1. So it's not that significant also relative to the earlier set of distribution gains from 26A. So now that we have completed distribution of the more say material gains from 26A Ayer Rajah Crescent, the DPU, I think she's probably in a bit of a need for some level of support. We have that available. I think it's time for us to continue that distribution, but it's not a lot. If you look at the effect, it's only 2 quarters, this quarter and the next quarter. And, subsequent quarters don't have anything programmed or scheduled. So the question on the 546 million, or 44 million, or 545 million, I think Lily can give you that.
I think in terms of the currency, part of the 544 is actually the Jet Yen loan that we have taken on a short-term basis. So currently at this point for the Jet Yen, as you all know, we have done long-term bonds covering about 160 million. The balance is actually to be done through bank loan. We are now in the process of the documentation should be completing this quarter or this coming quarter. And currently for us to do the completion, we have actually drawn on short-term loan. So the bulk of your 544 is actually on a short-term loan basis, Jeff. I hope that answers your question. The rest of it are actually
Are we wrong? Mix of US and Sing.
Okay, the rest of the power is actually a mix of Sing dollars and US dollars. But if you are trying to figure out how much of these are hedged, I would say a large part of them are hedged. It's just that when we manage the hedges, it is managed on a portfolio basis. So as I said earlier, in terms of the hedge expiry, we have about 150 to 160 million of hedges that is due, and so the impact is not so significant.
What's the absolute dollar amount for US dollar borrowings out of the 545?
Absolute dollar. Wow, you're so detailed.
I think we'll take it offline, Mervyn.
Yeah, sure. Then there's my... So just back to my first question to go away. You don't have any things in the kitty, but are there any other properties that you divested before that you're still waiting for the tax treatment clarity, and also the proportion of fees paid in units? Will you be lifting it to temper the impact of higher borrowing costs?
Yeah, I forgot to answer your earlier question on fees and units. Right now, we don't have any plans yet. So, if you look at our past approaches on this, essentially either driven by use transactions, especially acquisitions where we have fees and units, arrangements, or issue units through the distribution reinvestment plan program. So right now we don't have any media plans to reactivate that. On your question on you know whether there's any residual elements, yes. If you look at the divestments that we have done, the all meaningful ones, the 6A Ayer Rajah Crescent I mentioned earlier, where we have done distributions of the gains for 8 quarters, there's the tax treatment part still unknown. So we get the clarity, the tax treatment, actually engagements with the tax authorities, then we'll probably be able to distribute it out. I think amount won't be large. It's just a small residual part of uncertain tax treatment. So other than that, we don't have any so-called significant divestments that would result in us having gains, whether you know tax pending tax clarity or not. Because if we look at our we have only 4 divestments done. For our 2 other divestments, it's 19 Changi South and also the Southfield facility, Michigan. The gains relatively small, any. It's actually very marginal. So we don't think we'll be able to any kind of gains distribution there. So going forward, look at what else we can divest, any of the assets that are probably less relevant in our longer term strategy that we can divest. And if we are able to crystallize any divestments, then we can look at the possible distributions. Now it's we're still at an early stage. As I have shared in some of our conversations as well, gauging the market and trying to get some sense of interest assets. So there's some level of interest, not that interesting yet. Maybe we'll be able to look at one or two kind of possibilities, but I think quantum probably will be large. Something that we'll continue to manage in terms of you know the portfolio profile.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Yeah, I think when it rains, even a small umbrella makes a big difference.
Can we have Tan Xuan ask the next question, please?
Yeah, hi, morning. My first question is on reversion, right? 8.8% for second quarter. Can you share what is it for first half? And for full year, are you still guiding for low single digit?
Okay, we work out the mathematical effect of the first half. I don't think it's as high. Actually, your third quarter number is actually we'll say a relatively challenging number. Now, going forward, I think the market and growth might not be as exuberant as think a low single digit will probably be what we can look out for in the next 2 quarters.
I think we may not provide a 6-month rental reversion number, but the portfolio rental reversion for 1Q was 5.3%.
So, I mean, partly a mathematical thing, you can take a simple average and that would be quite close to what you can arrive at, you know, staring at every single reversion. So, essentially, we are quite I would say happy with the outcome for this quarter, but I don't think it's a level that we are able to really replicate future quarter. So low single digit or mid kind of level, about 5% level is probably a more realistic kind of level.
Okay, got it. And second question is on ramp up at Kallang Way. Seems a bit slow. What would be the main pushback from prospective tenants?
Okay. Essentially, there are not that many large users out there that are ready to commit. Because for Kallang Way precinct, a lot of space that we need to lease. We are talking about close to 400,000 square feet. So our aim is to get very large space users, but the kind of demand is relatively low. Most of the prospects that we're dealing with, and they're cutting across many industry sectors, most of the prospects we're dealing with, they are looking at the smaller kind of space needs. A few thousand square feet to even a larger one, 10 or so thousand square feet. So it's taking us a bit more time to build up the occupancy. So, especially now that the economic outlook becoming a little less certain. Capital costs is I think, getting to be bit more, a bit higher for any businesses looking to commit to any lease, commit to any expenditures. So the companies are becoming a little more careful, and therefore I think it's a little more difficult for us to secure large commitments. So our team is certainly working hard, engaging the market, talking to the prospects. Our sense is that in the coming months, it will probably be a major accumulation of more smaller users than a couple of very large ones that can help us improve our occupancy levels. So, in short, it is a bit slower than what we have anticipated, but we're working hard at it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Tan Xuan. Brandon, would you like to ask your question?
Yeah, hi. Go ahead, can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, my first question would be, you wanted to follow up on the divestments in Singapore, right? Can you give us more clarity on that, and how far would you go in terms of the divestment or even discount, right? I open as far as this 10% discount just to get your gearing down. Yeah, just my question. Second one is, can you update on the Waki space as well as the San Diego space for AT? Yep.
Sorry, Brandon, I think you were breaking up. We didn't hear the end of your first question and the second question.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, basically, just want to ask how the updates on the Singapore divestment exercise, and how far would you go in terms of the discount or premium? Like for instance, will you be willing to sell at, say, 10% discount just to get this going? Yeah, just want to hear your thoughts on that. That's my first one.
Okay.
And yeah. Yep.
Okay, I think the second one, we more or less get a gist of what you are. So the divestment exercise is actually a portfolio, a rebalancing exercise. Not only it has positive impact if you are able to divest meaningfully on a positive impact on the leverage. As you have seen in our current reported leverage level, 37.9%, still a very healthy level. So there is no compelling reason for us to get a divestment just for the purpose of, you know, managing our risk level. So I think I just maybe about 10 minutes back talk about engaging the market on our Singapore assets. So we do get some offers coming in, but some are interesting, but not all are interesting enough. So the assets that I think we have looked at are essentially some of our feather factories and then our business park buildings to see whether there's some level of interest. So there was some initial interest in terms of pricing, probably not at a level which we think is meaningful for us to invest for the sake of investing. So as to your question, we want to push for the divestment with some discounts being given. At this stage, I think it's probably not necessary for us to do that. A lot of these assets, as you have seen in our off-putting, still giving us very good occupancy levels and very strong yields. So if it is a case of selling at a discount, even higher yields than the player would take on, it is probably not a move that we'll take in the meantime. So we would be selective divestment process, and we will look at preferably divesting at valuation or at prices that gives us a bit of a premium that would allow us to strengthen our balance sheet well. So it's a relatively selective kind of approach that we are taking at the moment. And for the other question, the other two assets, the San Diego one, largest facility we have, as we have shared, the lease has extended to December 2024. So we are exploring all options, whether it's a divestment, whether it's a redevelopment, or let kind of approach. So we do not have anything material as of now, so we will be continuing to look at all these options. Milwaukee asset, the smallest one, 9%. These had expired last month, September 3. So it is vacant now. We are engaging the market on all the few prospects that might be interested. So we do not have something that the close to being crystallized, but all the Tennessee asset where we are already in discussions on the lease. So this will take a bit of time. So I think we at least we are 6 to 9 months of downtime before we get some clarity, but we work hard on that.
Okay, hey, thanks so much, Corey. That's it. Thanks.
Maybe before we take the next question from Derek Chang, I'd like to ask a question from from Jonathan Lim on the web. Had the Japan data centers started contributing at the start of Q2 instead of actual end of Q2, would DPU still have declined this quarter despite the enlarged share count?
You see our friends down here. Scratching their head. But it is a very relevant question. My sense is that you might still get a bit of you signed. That is, the contribution won't be large enough to offset. Some of you would have seen, other than the operating for the outcome of portfolio, or some of the assets we still trying to lease up, and some have vacancies building up. But the bigger impact actually comes from has caused the increase. Look at the quarter percent increase, small, the first half 20%. So that will continue to reflect on the distributable income. So a best test, I think, is next quarter's results announcement, where we have one full quarter of contributions from the Osaka facility. I think one thing we would like to share, line as well, is that the Osaka data center, a phased completion, kind of on a phased completion schedule. The completion of the acquisition transaction on 28th of September, we only have 70% of cash flow because it's 70% done, as we turned out. We have the balance 30% that will be finished up progressively from this year, from early part of next year onwards. So we still have a small little wrap up. Okay, our mathematical down here said they punch numbers into their giant spreadsheet. They say maybe marginal kind of DPU growth if we would factor all these as you know, as if we had the asset as at the start of the quarter. I think the fact of the matter is we only got it 3 days before the close of the quarter, so positive effect will be felt in the third quarter of the financial year. But our worry at the end of the day is the interest cost impact that we, offset whatever gains we get from this.
Thank you, Boy. Derek, questions for us? Derek Chang.
Hi, morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, morning, Corey and team. Just wanted to follow up on Lily's earlier comments on the interest rate outlook. I'm not sure if I heard correctly, but are you guiding for 3.2% for this FY, and then next FY is when it moves up to 3.5%?
Okay. Currently, it's about 3.2. I think for the next few, for the rest of the financial year, we probably do still expect interest rate to be creeping up. So I think on the average for this year, we will probably be looking at a range of about between 3 to 3.5. That should be the range for this financial year. But next financial year, when we see the full set of your replacement of some of the hedges, with some of the expiry hedges that comes through, we would expect the interest cost to increase a bit.
I see. So probably closer towards the 4% handle.
I think that one really also depends on what happened in next quarter, right? Like I said, the big question of this quarter and of the year is to hike or not to hike.
Okay, understood. And just
crystal ball.
Next one would understand. It's difficult. Next one is on Milwaukee. Expired in September, but is that reflected in the U.S. DC occupancy? Because I noticed that crept up actually in this quarter.
Okay. The reason why we have that increase in occupancy is because we have finally started the lease for our asset in Leonia, 67,000 square feet, as you have read in our earlier information given. And then left over a year back. So we managed to get a tenant that finally, got all these paperwork done. Started the lease, I think, for September, is it? September. So that has resulted in that small little bump up in occupancy level. Anyway, it's not mentioned earlier, it's not a data center tenant. So trying to find the right category or categorization for this tenant. They provide adult health daycare service.
Right. Is the Milwaukee tenancy vacancy reflected already?
No, I think that has not been reflected because the lease expired on 30th September. So you'll see the effect in the next.
So what would the occupancy be if we include that?
We'll have to come back to you on that.
Okay, sure, no problem. And this is lastly on divestments. The Singapore divestments. Is there a dollar value that you can share for the, I guess, the assets that you put on market? And I guess on the inquiries, you've had a few inquiries so far. Just wondering what the profile is like. Are they an occupiers, funds, or even fellow?
Okay. I think this is not something secret. When we went up, very broad spectrum of potential buyers. So we have put in three business park buildings as possibilities. If you look at the aggregate valuation, slightly more than $500 million. We have put in a couple of our other factories, all of them. So we are talking about another $500 million. So we look at this as possibilities. So in an ideal world, when the market is very tight, say if you are able to crystallize, maybe a billion. But that one is what we are putting out as items on our menu. Each one's with the potential buyers. But I think realistically, in case of whether you get interest for a couple of them, one or two of them, maybe a hard portfolio. So the sense we get from indications is that there's some interest. As I said, some of them are looking for some level of discounts and support. So it might not be as interesting or meaningful for us. This is a continuous process and engagement that we should have going forward. I think this is the time shared earlier. As our garden grows, need to do some pruning. So this is that regular check with the market, regular adjustments that we'll be doing. So we'll go through this process periodically and see, you know, when the market is a little more conducive for transactions, the outlook is even clearer. Maybe we'll crystallize some of these later, further down the road.
Right, but for now, Bob, $500 to $1 billion available for sale.
Yeah, I mean that's the kind of items we have on the menu. But it is not like a target size or scale that we're looking at. Because at the end of the day, the engagements with the potential buyers, either a case of us telling them, look at our annual report, whatever that's down there is available for sale. And it becomes too broad in terms of the kind of management. So we decided to narrow down the narrative in terms of what we are possibly looking at. So that's how we arrive at that. I say, okay, this is a smaller subset which might be possible to solicit kind of a feedback, but it doesn't certainly mean that, oh yes, there's some level of interest, we're prepared to do 500. It's essentially, like I mentioned earlier, outlining what might be menu.
Right, but I guess more imminently, do you think you could do maybe 50 million plus over the next 2 quarters? Is that realistic?
What was the question?
Well, they can do 50 million, right? In over
300 million, like, is it realistic? Yeah.
Might be. 1500, yeah, that is, I would say, a possible kind of level. Because at the end of the day, this, in a market like this, where it's a bit more, of course, challenging, and you need to find the right match in terms of whether that are able to fire and, you know, at price levels which we think that we will be able to divest. So I think that level 1500 might be a realistic reference level for us to look at, or finally being able to match demand and supply part of
Right.
It is something to look at.
Thanks, Derek.
Right, great. Thanks so much, Kowei.
Thank you. We are going to take the last two questions so that we can try to target to close at the end of the hour. Sutai, would you like to ask your questions, please?
Yeah. Hi. Thanks, Kowei. Stephen from Macquarie. Just two questions. First of all, just to follow up on Xuan's question, particularly on the Kolam Ayer asset itself, can you give us an idea right now? Let's just say you're going to go out to lease to a tenant. What sort of rents you're going to get? What sort of tenant profile that you're hoping to get into right now? And then maybe some idea as to like what is going to be over the next 12 months. I understand that the market may be soft, but really what is the target? And then ultimately some guidance on this particular asset over the next 12 months. Second thing is that I think last quarter you did talk about acquisition. So I just want to ask, you know, right now, is this still going to be there? And then acquisition pipeline, is it still like, you know, some profile? Is it going to be a sponsor of the party? And then is this really going to be something you look at, or is this going to be selling assets right now? Because your balance sheet is actually okay. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. Well, I think the rent levels that we're targeting still around the $4 per square foot per month for the Kolam Ayer asset. We think our product good, has fairly high specifications, and it's at the right location. So while we recognize that the leasing progress is a little slower, we have fairly meaningful kind of engagements with the market. So it's across a very broad spectrum from instrumentation companies, low-tech companies, precision engineering companies across the board. This is a very broad industry segment, so we do not have any particular sector that is very prominent. So our facility is flexible enough to accommodate many of industry users who certainly work hard in building up the occupancy. Now, looking ahead, 12 months, we hope to be able to get to a level of, say, 75%, so that it is a meaningful level. So that is the kind of a near-term target for us. On the acquisition front, certainly there are news popping up now and then. But if you look across the board, spread over cost of capital, I would say non-existent in any markets. So unless it's a very compelling transaction, it's difficult for us to crystallize any news now meaningfully. So we will continue to look, but I think realistic outcome is that any acquisitions will probably be done in the part next year or beyond. That's a near term, likely for the market to adjust, also for your physical market assets that are at the right kind of pricing level for us to deliver appropriate level of efficient portfolio. The only few occasions we will give you that decent spread, it will be bad. That's the reason why we seized the opportunity maybe this year, the transaction. But opportunities like this, few and far in between. So I think we'll be very selective and careful the way we look at the acquisition opportunities. So as you all have observed as well, the time for us to look at maybe adjusting the portfolio a little, investment would be something that we'll look at a bit more closely. That's why we started this engagement process. But our balance sheet is still relatively strong. So be selective. Well, we know we adjust our portfolio.
Thanks, Lutai.
Very clear. Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks, Kowei. Thank you.
Krishna, would you like to do the honors of asking the last two questions?
Hey, thank you very much for taking my question. Just housekeeping ones. First is on the operating expense. What happened, like, I think Q1Q, it was increased by about 15%, if you can give some color on that. And then some general industry question. First is, you know, we hear a lot of the headlines about, you know, large companies coming to set up bases here, be it in electronics, automobiles, electric vehicles, or, you know, life sciences. Just wondering if, you know, the supply chain participants of these large companies, I mean, are you seeing demand for that? I'm just trying to get some color based on your earlier comment that you see, you potentially likely see more of the smaller tenants coming into your facilities later part of the year. So if you can give some color on that. And then the last question is that you have this divestment thing. Where will you acquire if you were to? Will you be more interested in further increasing your footprint in Japan?
I answer the simpler question first. Yes, certainly in the near term, Japan looks more interesting and more meaningful to us. It also helps us improve our portfolio diversification. So in the near term, yeah, that's where we need to look at more closely. Now, I'm going backwards in terms of the question answering. So the second question, next question is on the industries. Yes, we have seen certain large industrial companies setting up shop here. Fortunately, some of these kind of needs and demands have not been a good match for the products that we're offering. For example, your bees and all those. Those are very special. From direct allocation of ground up build.
Kowei, you are breaking apart on the second question.
Okay. So essentially kind of large industrial users, like for example some of the EV producers are not say good matches or whatever products that we have, especially now where we are trying to reach high spec 30 at Kallang. So the pockets of kind of demand continues to be a bit smaller. And I think one observation that we have is that new corporates coming in, including Chinese corporates, I would say a meaningful representation on our prospect list. So still generally a smaller user, not complete production plan kind of demand that we are seeing. Though that, of course, observed in the other so-called Singapore. It's not a good match for people that way. The next question is on the operating cost or margin.
I think in Singapore, the effect is slight increase in terms of utilities, mainly because there's a slight increase in tariff rates from SP services. Also, with the commencement of Kallang Way, we obviously that has increased as well. If we look at expenses for the US, I think it might be better to like look at NPI margin. So if you're referring to a Q-on-Q increase, you'll note that actually NPI margin had dropped. For the US in particular, because some expenses are charged to the tenant at a later date, and we look more closely at the NPI margin, and I think that was due to rent-free period for some leases and lower pass-through income. So higher expenses. Singapore,
right.
And in the US, rent-free effect plus pass-through income, lower pass-through income.
Right. Okay. So you are showing positive reversions, but then your rent frees have also sort of gone up, right? So face rent relatively kind of effective rent kind of relatively flattish.
I think the rent free refers to the North American portfolio, which tends to be lumpy because there are just not that many leases that can be signed in a particular quarter. So I think that is not really seen in Singapore portfolio.
Okay. Finally, if I just want to squeeze in this Japan acquisition, is it like, do you really like kind of like these assets, or is it more to for the JPY, cheap JPY debt?
First and foremost, we are a real estate platform, so we need to like real estate attributes first. The JPY thing is icing on the cake.
Okay. Now, because I think you raised more JPY debt than the asset value for that Osaka asset, if I remember correctly. So I was just wondering that.
Okay.
Let me just clarify, we did not raise more JPY debt. We raised exactly the same amount that is required for the acquisition. So I'm basically 100% capital hedge for the JPY. Of course, the obvious reason being that this is just a way of doing the, I think, the capital to minimize any effects fluctuations in terms of the capital, right? And of course, the other consideration is amongst all my currency, definitely JPY is the lowest. We will borrow more in JPY to fund other my investments in other countries? Not likely, because that basis.
Okay. Thank you very much for your answers. Thank you.
You are. We are at 10:29. Thank you for spending the hour with us. If you have any more questions or if it was not clear because of audio, we apologize. Please reach out to me if you have any more clarifications. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Have a good day.